Good morning and welcome to the Monday edition of Times the Brief. I'm Harvey Kojan, and these are the top stories of the day. Times the Brief is supported by Squarespace, providing tools for creative individuals and business owners to make a website. Squarespace includes hosting, e-commerce, and 24/7 customer care. Learn more at squarespace.com/thebrief. Wildfires blazing in several western states Sunday chewed up forests and threatened homes, but were most numerous in Northern California, where dozens are raging and setting off evacuations. Wildfires are also burning in Washington and Oregon. The biggest California wildfire, raging in the Lower Lake area north of San Francisco, spread overnight to cover even more drought-stricken ground, expanding more than 30 square miles in 4 or 5 hours, said California's Forestry and Fire Protection Director Ken Pimlott. The fast-moving blaze had charred 71 square miles by Sunday, an area much bigger than San Francisco's 49 square miles. The fire has destroyed 24 homes and 26 outbuildings and was threatening 5,000 homes. Many of the California blazes were sparked by lightning and exacerbated by tinder dry trees and grass and erratic winds, Pimlott said. The biggest challenge is the extreme and explosive rates of spread of these fires, he said. More than 9,000 firefighters are working to quell the blazes. One firefighter was killed late last week at the scene of a fire at the Modoc National Forest, 100 miles south of the Oregon border. Governor Jerry Brown declared a state of emergency for California and activated the California National Guard to help with disaster recovery. California on Sunday secured a grant from the Federal Emergency Management Agency, or FEMA, to help ensure the availability of vital resources to suppress the blaze burning in Lake County, said California Governor's Office of Emergency Services Director Mark Gilarducci. The federal grant will assist local, state, and tribal agencies responding to the fire to apply for 75% reimbursement of their eligible fire suppression costs, Gilarducci said. Senator Ted Cruz on Sunday said facts don't support climate change in a speech that described the notion as a front for power-hungry politicians who want to control Americans' lives. During an appearance before some of the most influential conservative donors in the country, the Texas Republican said there is no factual basis for scientists' research that shows the planet is changing. The 2016 White House hopeful said none of the research is worth the paper it is printed on. If you look at satellite data for the last 18 years, there's been zero recorded warming, Cruz said in California's Orange County. The satellite says it ain't happening. Instead, Cruz said, government researchers are reverse engineering data sets to falsify changes in the climate. They're cooking the books. They're actually adjusting the numbers, Cruz said. Enron used to do their books the same way. Cruz said scientists 4 decades ago were studying global cooling. A global ice age was coming, and they were as wrong as those who now say the Earth is warming. Senator, you're not saying global warming isn't real, interrupted his interviewer, Politico's Mike Allen. I'm saying that data and facts don't support it, Cruz said to applause from 450 donors to the political network organized by billionaire industrialists Charles and David Koch. This article posted by Philip Elliott in Dana Point, California. The Athens Stock Exchange reopened Monday morning to a huge loss, with the ATHEX dropping by 22.8% to 615.16 points, a total loss of 182.36 points within minutes. According to the BBC, Greek bank shares are to blame for the plunge. Piraeus Bank, National Bank, Alpha Bank, and Euro Bank, who represent the country's largest lenders, all saw a 30% fall in their share values. The exchange was closed for the past 5 weeks as Greece was renegotiating its debt load with international creditors. The BBC says traders had predicted a drop in share value upon the exchange's reopening. According to the European Commission, Greece is expected to enter into a recession this year. This article posted by Joanna Plusinska. Doping in athletics is much more pervasive than previously believed, according to a recent investigation disputing the accuracy of drug tests carried out by the International Association of Athletics Federations, the IAAF. The British Sunday Times newspaper and German broadcaster ARD hired scientists to look over test results of 12,000 blood samples gathered from 5,000 athletes competing in international sporting events between 2001 and 2012. The files were provided by a whistleblower within the IAAF, the BBC reports. Leading anti-doping experts Robin Parisotto and Michael Ashenden, who were hired to carry out the investigation, found a marked increase in doping and blood transfusions to boost athletic performance in the last decade since 2001. The findings are detailed in an ARD documentary, Doping Top Secret: The Shadowy World of Athletics. Ashenden said the data shows a shameful betrayal of the IAAF's primary duty to police their sport and to protect clean athletes, comparing the current doping problem to that of cycling in the time of disgraced seven-time Tour de France winner Lance Armstrong, who was subsequently stripped of his titles for taking banned substances. The findings suggest that over a third of the athletes who won medals in endurance events between 2001 and 2012 allegedly had suspicious test results, including 10 athletes at the London 2012 Olympics. None of these have been stripped of their medals, according to the BBC. The report also alleges that 80% of Russian medalists tested showed dubious lab results. Time has not been able to independently verify these allegations. The World Anti-Doping Agency, WADA, will create an independent commission to investigate the test data shown in the ARD documentary further. WADA President Sir Craig Reedy said the allegations shake the foundation of clean athletes worldwide, the BBC reports. The International Olympic Committee has also since announced that they will punish any Olympic athletes that are found guilty of doping upon WADA's review of the data, the AP says. The IAAF has responded to the investigation by claiming that the allegations are largely based on analysis of an IAAF database of private and confidential medical data which has been obtained without consent. They have promised a detailed rebuttal to the leak. This article posted by Joanna Plusinska. American teenager Katie Ledecky has improved her own world record in the 1500-meter freestyle at the Swimming World Championships. The 18-year-old Ledecky completed the marathon-like race in 15 minutes 27.71 seconds, shaving 0.65 seconds off the mark she set at last year's Pan Pacific Championships in Australia. The swim came during morning heats Monday. She'll have a chance to improve it again in Tuesday's final. It's the fourth time Ledecky has broken the record in the 1500. She also holds world marks in the 400 and 800 free. The White House plans to unveil regulations on Monday to dramatically curtail greenhouse gas emissions from power plants and eventually revamp the country's energy industry. The regulations, billed by President Obama as the biggest, most important step ever taken to address climate change, play a key role in the president's aim to make combating climate change a priority of his final months in office. The Environmental Protection Agency rules, finalized versions of 2012 and 2014 proposals, call for a 32% reduction in carbon emissions from power plants by 2030 from 2005 levels. The White House projects that the rules will drive increased investment in renewable energy, leading to 30% more clean energy generation by 2030 and a dramatic reduction in coal power. No matter who you are, where you live, or what you care about, climate change is personal and it's affecting you and your family today, EPA Administrator Gina McCarthy told reporters Sunday on a conference call. The rule sets carbon emissions reduction standards for each state to meet based on the current makeup of the state's energy sources. Under the regulation, each state will be allowed to determine how it meets those standards, whether by targeting specific plants or making changes across the board. The plan also includes an incentive program to provide federal funds for states to develop clean energy. The plan has already been met with intense criticism from the oil and gas industry, including the promise of legal challenges. Republicans in Congress, as well as state governors, have taken up the mantle of challenging the rules, saying it would harm the economy. Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell sent letters to governors across the country in March, providing the legal arguments to suggest that the federal government lacks the authority to mandate such reductions. This proposed regulation would have a negligible effect on global climate, but a profoundly negative impact on countless American families already struggling, McConnell wrote in a March op-ed in the Lexington Herald Leader. The regulation is unfair. It's probably illegal. The White House and environmental advocates have argued that the rule would stimulate the economy and create tens of thousands of jobs. Asked whether the EPA has the legal authority to implement the rule, McCarthy said the agency had considered the legal issues and the measure is legally a very strong rule. Monday's news is one of many expected announcements from the White House designed to elevate the issue of climate change in the U.S. The president will highlight the issue in his meeting with Pope Francis this fall and his travel to Alaskan Arctic, and has announced a number of new policies and partnerships. All told, the attention is meant to position the U.S. as a leader in fighting climate change in the lead-up to a United Nations conference on climate change in December. This rule actually enhances in important ways our ability to achieve the international commitments that we have, said Brian Deese on a conference call for journalists. This rule gives us a strong foundation to keep pushing against our international commitment. This article posted by Justin Warland. Times the Brief is brought to you by Squarespace. Squarespace is the easiest way to create a beautiful website, blog, or online store for you and your ideas. Squarespace features an elegant interface, beautiful templates, and incredible 24/7 customer support. Try Squarespace at squarespace.com and enter offer code THEBRIEF at checkout to get 10% off. Squarespace. Build it beautiful. Nigerian troops rescued 178 people from Boko Haram in attacks that destroyed several camps of the Islamic extremists in the northeast of the country, an army statement said Sunday. A spokesman said that 101 of those freed are children, along with 67 women and 10 men. The Nigerian Air Force reported killing a large number of militants in repelling an attack on Bida Village, 50 kilometers southwest of the army operations that took place around Bama, 70 kilometers southeast of Maiduguri City. Maiduguri is the birthplace of Boko Haram and the capital of the northeastern Borno state. Sunday statements did not specify when the attacks occurred. Last week, the army rescued 71 kidnapped people. Hundreds have been freed from Boko Haram captivity this year, but none of the 219 girls abducted in April 2014 from a school in Chibok were among the rescued. The extremists distributed a new video on Twitter on Sunday purporting to show attacks on Nigerian army barracks. The video also shows the beheading of a man in military fatigue said to be a Nigerian soldier. According to a translation by the Site Intelligence Group, an unidentified fighter shown in the video with looted army weapons and ammunition says the footage shows Nigeria's military has not forced Boko Haram from its positions and got them hemmed into the Sambisa forest, as the military has claimed. Some of those rescued last week said they had been held by Boko Haram for up to 1 year in villages just 40 kilometers from Maiduguri. This article posted by Michelle Fall for the Associated Press in Nigeria. American Pharoah finished first at the Haskell Invitational Stakes in New Jersey on Sunday, 2 months after becoming only the 12th Triple Crown winner in a century. This horse, he just keeps bringing it, Bob Baffert, the horse's trainer, told the Associated Press. He's just a great horse. American Pharoah finished the mile in an eighth course in just under a minute and 48 seconds, pulling ahead of the horse competitive edge in the final stretch after maintaining a second-place stride for most of the race. The victory earned the horse's team a purse of $1.75 million, bringing his career winnings to more than $5.5 million. Nearly 61,000 spectators came to the Monmouth County racetrack to watch the celebrated colt race. Barring a moment when New Jersey Governor Chris Christie was booed in the winner's circle, the crowd, Baffert said, was electric. "I couldn't believe the crowd, how loud it was," he said to the Associated Press, his voice cracking with emotion. "It was a great crowd. I love bringing my horses here. Thank you for being behind Pharoah the whole way." It is reported that the colt, who turned three in February, will retire from competitive racing in October, notably younger than most of his peers who sometimes continue to race into their teens. This article posted by Nash Jenkins. Around 200 protesters staged a demonstration in front of Hong Kong's police headquarters on Sunday, wearing and waving bras and carrying placards to protest the recent conviction of a woman for assaulting a police officer with her breast, the South China Morning Post reports. Eng Lei Ying, 30, was sentenced to 3.5 months in jail last Thursday. Authorities say she intentionally pushed her breast against Officer Chan Ka Po while participating in a demonstration against cross-border trading in March in order to falsely accuse him of molesting her. Video of the demonstration at which Eng was arrested appears to show her with a bloody nose. There has been no word on what injuries Officer Chan suffered. Luke Kit Ling, a spokeswoman for the march, told the Post that Eng's conviction was shocking and regrettable and expressed fears that it would deter women from taking part in social movements and deprive them of the right to take part in political activities. Many male activists on the march donned bras as an expression of solidarity with Eng, who is currently free on bail pending an appeal. Protesters chanted, "A breast is not a weapon." This article posted by Rishi Iyengar. Elizabeth, she's here? The thumbs up came from the back of the meeting room, and 200 future Senator Elizabeth Warren stood up and waited for their prototype to enter. Spindly and with a bouncy step, the Massachusetts senator strode rapidly into the room and was waylaid by a friendly sea of imperfect facsimiles calling for selfies. "What a way to start the morning," Warren said at last, breathless at the podium. Warren was stopping by a conference on Thursday, just a 10-minute walk away from the Capitol building in Washington, D.C., where the goal was unabashedly to bolster the Warren brand of the Democratic Party. In the belly of the swank Washington Court Hotel, also the host of recent events for steel wire producers and the beef industry, progressive candidates for municipal and state office across the country had gathered for a four-day affair to create a surge of Democratic candidates in municipal and state elections and build a movement of rookie Warrens. The conference, organized by the advocacy group Progressive Change Campaign Committee, was intended to train candidates and activists from states far-flung as Wisconsin and Louisiana to run for office and eventually shape national policy. Time was one of the only publications granted access to the meeting. Much of the focus was on the nuts and bolts of effective campaigning and fundraising. Questions flew. Do candidates need to fundraise within their own district? How much time should candidates spend on fundraising calls? How do you best target voters during get-out-the-vote efforts? Should candidates' events have red wine or are cookies enough? The PCCC offered candidates who attended back-end internet tools replete with website templates and ready-made email blasters and event managers. But Warren was the star attraction. "You are the progressive bench, and we need a bench," Warren told them. Dozens of attendees wore identical blue shirts that said, "I'm from the Elizabeth Warren wing of the Democratic Party." "Elizabeth Warren is the North Star," said Adam Green, co-founder of the PCCC. And the enthusiasm for Warren has spilled over all across the left. I want to clone Elizabeth Warren into every candidate, said Teferi Gebre, the executive vice president of the AFL-CIO, in an interview with Time 2 weeks ago. In the Washington Hotel, building an army of Warrens to challenge the establishment-backed Democrats was exactly the point. Yes, this is about building campaigns and winning office, but this is also about building a movement, Warren said during her keynote on Thursday. You are the living spark of the progressive movement. It was a sentiment made clear by the conference organizers. How do we elect 300 more Elizabeth Warrens, said Stephanie Taylor, the co-founder of the PCCC, who dreamt up the conference. This training is part of it, finding them and giving them the tools to run great campaigns. For progressives, movement building with Warren in the lead is in large part about catching up to conservatives. Republicans can boast of presidential candidates Ted Cruz and Rand Paul, Rush Limbaugh, and a formidable coalition of right-wing legislators threatening to unseat their House Speaker. Meanwhile, the left has a few big city mayors, a struggling cable network, MSNBC, a handful of legislators, Sherrod Brown, Keith Ellison, and an upstart presidential candidate, Senator Bernie Sanders, who counts Eugene V. Debs and the nation of Denmark among his biggest influences. And Warren has refused to run for the White House. Anger over the Obama years is a key motivator for conservatives. The stimulant on the left is made of a milder sauce, namely disappointment over the Obama years, and many progressive ideals have faltered in Congress and on their way to the White House. Republicans have taken notice of Warren's influence over Democrats. While the activists met in Washington, her name came up on the Republican campaign trail in Cedar Falls, Iowa. The fact is the Democratic Party has a problem, New Jersey Governor Chris Christie said. Their problem is that Elizabeth Warren is taking over that party. They're all running to be just like Elizabeth Warren, he added, saying that Hillary Clinton has borrowed from Warren's playbook on the campaign trail. Though Warren was only present for the first hour of the four-day training session, her name came up again and again. When she ran for Senate in 2012, Warren liked to make fundraising calls from her kitchen at home while boiling a pot of tea and wearing a headset, an alumna of Warren's fundraising team, Sarah Badawi, told trainees. Joel Silberman, a speech trainer, said in a session that when he consulted Warren before a Massachusetts state convention speech, he told Warren a trick to cure nerves, count the number of steps to the podium. Taylor and Green of the PCCC once sat on Warren's front porch and shared lemonade and iced tea to convince her to first run for Senate, Warren noted during her address. The former director of research for Warren's senatorial campaign, Peter Jones, led a class on opposition research. A quick Google search on Warren's defeated opponent for the Senate, Scott Brown, shows him shirtless in photos hawking diet pills, a fact that Warren recently noted in a speech. Most of those hoping to follow Warren's lead at the conference don't look anything like her or share her Ivy League background. There was the black state senator who represents Ferguson, an Indian American candidate for Congress from a Detroit suburb, and as many pairs of sneakers as suits. Union organizers, mothers, climate activists, feminists, and campaign staffers were in Washington from Vermont and Georgia. You are a part of a global re-owning of a populist progressive vision of America, said Zephyr Teachout, chief executive of the May Day PAC, which aims to get money out of politics. Many at the conference argued local victories could sway their states and ultimately Congress. Over a lunch of ravioli and tagliatelle with lemon sauce and iced tea, two attendees from Rhode Island debated the merits of the conference. The more states have something like paid leave and it's successful, more likely we'll be able to get Congress to move it forward, Shandy Hanna, an activist at the Women's Fund of Rhode Island, said. We need to infiltrate the system and change it. You look around this room, the people I've met makes me realize the country is moving in a good direction, said Margot Morisseau, a candidate for Rhode Island State Senate. So far, the left has been incapable of the kind of movement that caught fire on the right after President Obama's election. but in some ways things have changed in recent years. Cities and states like California and Rhode Island are requiring businesses to provide paid family leave. Activists in New York, Los Angeles, and Seattle have, with mixed success, pushed for a $15 minimum wage. Bernie Sanders has attracted crowds of 10,000 and more in purple and red states like Wisconsin and Arizona. To progressives, those are signs of shifting winds. People will start to realize there's a change happening from underneath. They'll either have to evolve or die, said Chris Larson, a state senator in Wisconsin. Some date the recent wave in progressive activism back to Howard Dean's 2004 campaign. A left-backed candidate, Dean's loss in the primary spawned Democracy for America, a progressive PAC. The past 5 years has seen a slow increase in organizational support for progressive Democrats. DFA, MoveOn.org, Progressive Majority also aim to train progressive candidates for office. It's Warren's message that has helped motivate them in recent years, and attendees repeatedly mentioned Warren's name during the conference. "We can whine about this, we can whimper about this, or we can fight back," Warren said Thursday. "I'm fighting back." The goal, of course, is victory against Republicans and against old-line Democrats in primary contests. If they win, it will come the way of conquerors of old, by conversion or a rout. "It's our movement," said C.M. Winters Palacio, a Chicago librarian with punctuation in her first name, who is running for city council and says she is facing pushback from the moderate Democratic mayor, Rahm Emanuel. "We will eat the elephant one bite at a time." This article posted by Sam Frizzell. Former Florida Governor Jeb Bush has no apologies for using a network of political committees to outraise his rivals for the Republican presidential nomination. "You are officially certified as the $120 million man," Politico's Mike Allen said to Bush during an onstage interview at a summit of GOP megadonors. "What's the question?" Bush deadpanned. "How much is too much?" Allen pressed. "I don't know, but I think you might as well front-load it if you can. This is a long haul. Are we supposed to just warm up and work your way into it? Am I missing something here?" Bush said. Bush's campaign raised $11.4 million, and the super PAC supporting him collected more than $103 million so far, according to finance filings. Another political committee backing Bush brought in almost $5.4 million. Of the $120 million the groups have collected, they have spent less than $14 million so far. "Money helps. I'm playing by the rules of the game the way it's laid out," said Bush, who worked with the political committees before officially becoming a candidate. He also sent several of his former top advisors to outside groups to manage the unlimited cash machines. "If people don't like it, that's just tough luck," he added. Bush's lack of concern over collecting large amounts of money was shared by the 450 megadonors who were meeting this weekend at events organized by conservative billionaires Charles and David Koch. Together, they planned to spend $889 million on nonprofits, activism, and politics before Election Day 2016. This article posted by Philip Elliott in Dana Point, California. August is one of the best months for produce, according to Chris Romano, an associate produce coordinator at Whole Foods. "In summer, there are a lot of good choices out there," he says. "Based on where you live in the U.S., your produce offerings can vary, but in August, there are several fruits and veggies that are in season and tasty nationwide." Pluots. Summer is the season for stone fruit like plums, peaches, cherries, and pluots, which look like deep red or nearly forest green plums, and are especially flavorful this month. "August is by far their peak," says Romano. "They really sharpen in flavor and are very dramatic in color." Tomatoes. "These need long, hot days to really develop in flavor," Romano says. "Heirlooms have gotten so popular in the last few years," he says. "To find the perfect tomato, our friends at Cooking Light recommend looking for one with bright, shiny, firm skin that has a little give when gently squeezed." Grapes. "Grapes need many hours of sun and heat to develop their flavors, and they concentrate all their sugars in August," says Romano. we will see all sorts of varieties from champagne to cotton candy grapes. A good way to select grapes is to pay attention to the color of the stem. If the stems are brittle, it means they likely won't last very long once you bring them home. Grapes with a flexible green stem are a good bet. Melons. Though you can get a decent melon in the fall or even winter, summer is really their peak. Whether it's a melon with a white deep orange or a salmon flesh, there's nothing better, says Romano. To pick a good melon, look for symmetry, a heavy weight, and no bruising. Okra. August is a good month to keep an eye out for okra. Look for small green pods and steer clear of bruising. In the United States, okra has become a southern cuisine staple, but people living in other U.S. regions can enjoy it too. When okra is overcooked, it can have a slimy texture, so be sure to look up a couple of recipes before diving in. This article posted by Alexandra Sifferlin. Thanks for joining us. I'm Harvey Kojan, and you've been listening to the daily edition of Times the Brief. To get this sent to your inbox every morning, go to time.com/thebrief. You can also subscribe through iTunes or your favorite podcast app. I'll be back tomorrow. Until then, enjoy the day.